Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton, a social media activist from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate from Kensington, Maryland.
I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matuzak, a teacher and former political activist from Cincinnati, Ohio.
And we are doing our year-end episode. Now, a lot of people will be hearing this in the new year. That's grand. But for us, it's still 2017. So let's talk about the year that we're putting to bed today. Greg, you want to start?
Yeah. So what I did today was I put together a list of dates. Now, 2017 was crazy, and everything sort of jumbled together in my mind. So what I did today was I put together some dates, and I'm going to throw out these dates and see if you guys remember what happened on these dates. And seeing as it all runs together for me, you guys probably will remember some of them, but probably not. So the first one's pretty
easy.
So this
is like a contest, like a game show.
Yes, exactly.
And there will be prizes. Okay. Like
there will be prizes. Okay. All right, the first one. January 20th. What important event happened on January 20th?
Oh, I know. I cried for 8 straight hours.
All right.
Only
so besides
eight, Kevin?
It only started at 12:01.
Wait, no. Hang on. George W. Bush went to the White House and heard, in his words, quote, some weird shit.
So Kevin's tear ducts dried up. Anything else? What was the exact event?
It was the inauguration. It was the day Michelle Obama sat there and shook her head. Just shook her damn head.
Not on my watch. It was also the day that we figured out that Trump had no actual spatial reasoning and said, and made his first lie as president. Said, well, these are the bigliest crowds.
Huge, yes. No, well, he made Sean Spicer say it.
But was it that day or the next day?
It was that day. Because I was sitting in a hotel room. I'm like, he's making Sean Spicer lie already.
Right. He said, get out there. And he goes, and Sean Spicer came out
and
in
Sean
a huff.
Spicer
and he's like,
did. He did. He didn't have to. He could have quit.
How about April 10th? Who remembers what happened on April 10th?
That was the Muslim ban, and everyone headed to the airports.
No, that was earlier.
Oh.
Was that the
firing of Comey?
No. Gorsuch was sworn into the Supreme Court on April 10th.
I think we were all in a rage blackout that day.
All right, and to be quite honest, this was one of Donald Trump's big things.
That Supreme Court vacancy is what got him elected.
And I hope Mitch McConnell rots in hell for it.
All right. What about May 9th?
I don't know.
Comey was fired.
Oh.
Oh, that was May?
He was fired
I thought
in
that
May.
Was March. Okay.
Week later, May 17th.
Mueller appointed! Yeah, it was right on top of that. And I remember thinking he was such an amazing pick for that. I was like, are you kidding me? Are you trolling? What is this?
He's still an amazing pick.
You know, we're not going to do a whole person of the year thing, but if you really think about it, Rod Rosenstein might actually be the most important person of the last year.
Because
he didn't have to appoint a special prosecutor. He just did it.
I know.
Yeah.
Really. How about August 12th?
August 12th?
I was on vacation.
No, don't know. What?
Charlottesville.
Oh, right. Yes. I was driving home from vacation. I was watching it happen on Twitter.
Mm, it was a very dark time in this country that was only made worse. And it was not handled well by our president at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were good people on both sides.
Right.
What a jerk.
Which was not. What a jerk. Moving on. October 5th.
Probably some ladies' auxiliary uniform.
It was the New York Times came out with the report on Weinstein.
Okay. Oh.
October 5th. And that was huge. I mean, it really, I mean, and granted, the Women's March probably precipitated a lot of this, but considering that it steamrolled to the Me Too, hashtag Me Too, the Al Franken, everything.
Just think, October 5th to December 12th, when Doug Jones was elected and Roy Moore was defeated in Alabama, Think of everything that happened in 2 months yeah. and a week.
Yeah, no wonder we can't remember it all. God.
Yeah, I know. It's like brain overload.
It has nothing to do with creeping senility. It's not our age.
No. No.
Volume.
You know, 2017 was like 1968. It was a year that just had more history than any one year really should have.
Oh, I know. We all remember 1968, Kevin. Oh, jeez.
Talk about senility.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, tell us. Okay. Tell us about
fair
that
point.
One.
Fair
we
point.
We do know what happened in 1968. We did study sure. that much of American history. I mean, we haven't.
We did.
Unlike 1968, we haven't had any literal assassinations, just some character assassinations.
Yeah, right.
I might also argue that 1989 and 1991.
Ooh, yeah.
May have actually had greater lasting significance than 1968.
Yeah. Are you saying yeah, the fall true. Of the Berlin Wall is a major episode in world history, DJ? I can't imagine.
Yeah,
why.
That one. You know, the collapse of the Soviet Union and its disintegration. You know, little minor things.
Little things. Well, let's get back to the little thing of 2017.
December 12 is the next one, which I'm pretty sure Kevin's got.
That was the day Flynn pled guilty.
That was the day of the Suffolk Democratic Committee potluck dinner, because that's where I was that night, looking over returns from the Alabama result on my phone and
no,
you're spreading right. that with everybody.
You're all wrong. So it wasn't you're all
the
wrong.
Day, yeah,
it's it the day Amoroso was fired.
No, DJ is right. Doug Jones won the Alabama Senate.
And Amoroso
was fired.
Oh, that's true. Do you think it had anything to do with Doug Jones winning the Senate?
Actually,
we never talked about that.
Some people think that they were connected, that she somehow was part of trying to game out the strategy in Alabama. I don't know whether she had that kind of political clout, but some people
think John Kelly just
together.
Finally got sick of her.
All right, last one, which I'm hoping y'all will get right. December 20th. It was 10 days ago. It was 11 days ago. Come on.
Was that the tax bill?
It was the tax bill. The only piece of major legislation by the Trump administration was actually signed 11 days ago. So, yes, it was the tax bill.
And Paul Ryan got to live out his keg stand fantasy of reducing taxes.
Well, you guys, if I was grading you, you wouldn't have done so well in this year in review, which... Which I said it wasn't to be graded, but...
Hey, we had a better year than Theresa May, so let's go with that.
You know, I might have been able to get it right if you told it, if you'd thrown out the date that Kylie Jenner's pregnancy was revealed.
Kylie Jenner's pregnant?
Well, it's unconfirmed.
Okay, so now that we've talked about the year that we've lived through and loved, let's talk about the one coming up. 2018 obviously is going to be... a ridiculously major year in politics. But right now, I think the first story that might pop up as a major news story in 2018 is what's going on in Iran. Apparently, there's like these huge demonstrations, the biggest that we've seen there since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody came down on Obama because the Obama-Clinton State Department, you know, didn't really step up and give a lot of support to the protesters there. They kind of tried to play both sides of the fence. And a lot of people said, oh, they, you know, it was feckless foreign policy. I think Dick Cheney came down on Obama for that.
I would actually say that Obama's reaction to the 2009 protests was his very nice people moment. It was the same kind of ridiculous moral equivalence that we saw Trump employ after Charlottesville.
Oh, wow, boy. I disagree. That's a statement, DJ,
because we're talking foreign policy and foreign engagement, and as opposed to domestic policy. And
we are also talking about a regime that held over 50 of our people hostage in 1979 and still considered a point of pride. And in fact, we are talking about protesters who, on behalf of their country, apologized for that very hostage taking. The Obama administration tried to treat them with a ridiculous moral equivalence. Now, I may have very well engaged in hyperbole 30 seconds ago, but the fact of the matter is, the notion that the administration should have treated the protesters against that tyrannical regime and that tyrannical regime the same manner, with the same type, with that type of moral equivalence, was frankly something that very much upset me and angered me back then, and it still bothers me today. But for once, the Trump administration seems to have done what would normally be considered the right thing. It has responded with better words than Barack Obama did and his administration did in 2009.
Whoa.
Now, whether those words are more helpful, again, I'm not saying those words are more helpful because, well, it's Donald Trump. So there is always an issue of, you know, everything he touches turns to dust. I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, had Barack Obama used the words in 2009 that Donald Trump used in 2017, at the very least, it would have been unequivocally clear what side of history we were on. And perhaps the Green Revolution of 2009 would have had more life and could have still been there today, at the very least, to help us in opposing the Iranian regime. And quite possibly, if the Obama administration were serious about what the people of Iran really wanted, they might have helped the Green Revolution overthrow the tyrannical regime. They did not do anything like that. And I'm still upset at them for that.
I'm going to take issue with so many things that you said there, DJ. First of all, you know, even though I introduced this, and I kind of baited you a little bit because I was reading up on this yesterday after Trump came out with his little tweet about the Iranian protests, because I remembered the controversy about Obama not reacting strongly enough. So I went back and did a little research and found out
that is a
Republican myth that was started for the 2012 campaign. The Obama administration did speak out against what was happening. They didn't do it the day that everything started. They waited to see how this was going to build up and play out. And once the Iranians started clamping down on the protesters and shooting people in the streets, the Obama administration did, in fact, President Obama himself, did forcefully denunciate that. He talked about democracy having to be the rule of the day. He talked about tamping down on government violence. What you are doing is perpetuating a Mitt Romney-built myth. That's number one. Number two, you keep talking about 1979 and saying the same regime. It's not the same regime. The Ayatollah Khomeini was the leader of Iran then. He's been dead for like 25 years.
And who's running Iran today?
It's the religion is running the country, but it's not the same regime. And I want to go back and say one other thing. If the Obama administration had done what you say they should have done, and it led to the Green Revolution, and had Iran fell into the kind of mire that Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria have fallen into, then you guys would have blamed Obama for that. Look at what happened when we backed the Egyptian revolution. Look at what happened when we helped, by leading from behind, which I know people hate that phrase, helped overthrow Gaddafi in Libya. Everybody said, look at what the Obama administration did with their, you know, ridiculously aggressive foreign policy. They would have said the same thing if Iran had fallen into chaos over a revolution. And the last thing is, DJ, you are backing the wrong racehorse if you think that Trump reacting in a tweet the day of a news story is a better foreign policy than taking a measured, long-term view of it and reacting the way Obama did. Give me that kind of foreign policy any day over some asshole tweeting his response without even discussing it with his advisors. I'm off my high horse.
Okay. So let me jump in. Let me jump in for a second. So the problem is, do we even have much of a change in foreign policy from the Obama administration in reality from the Trump administration? I mean, Trump never left NATO, which was one of his big campaign promises. We still have troops in Iraq. We still have troops in Afghanistan. We still have troops in Syria, right? Nothing's really changed. He says he's going to do all these things, but nothing really has. It's maybe more of a dickish and prickish foreign policy that he talks about. It is. It's
well,
a pricklier,
right?
And he has. So he's pulled out of the Paris Accord. And who was it on Meet the Press this morning? BBC correspondent Caddy Kay even said all these things. It's a less principled foreign policy where it's not that, you know, America will lead and America will stand first on like climate change. And where before that was something that we were worried about against our military and things like that. But we're not. It's the same true foreign policy as the Obama administration. So really, not much has changed.
But he's redefining the narrative through appearances. What DJ's complaining about with Obama being so slow to respond to the 2009, Iranian Arab Spring is the same complaint that a lot of people had after Benghazi, that Obama didn't call it terrorism soon enough. They didn't define their terms soon enough. They didn't respond with a knee jerk. And Donald Trump is very good at giving that immediate knee jerk response and making people feel, yeah, hell yeah, America, we're so cool. We tweet shit.
Right.
But George W. Bush did that. It's a Potemkin foreign policy where it looks kind of cool.
People don't know what that means anymore.
I don't know. My daughter and I were talking about that word the other day.
For those who no longer remember the Soviet Union, it is essentially the idea of keeping up appearances. There is Potemkin was a village in the Soviet Union where the Soviets trained operatives for the United States. And it was essentially a little America right in the middle of the Soviet Union for their agents to train in. And so it becomes an example of essentially anything that is fake, you throw the Potemkin label on them. But I would like to actually respond to Kevin's points. And first of all, regarding the Obama administration, it should not have surprised them that the Iranian regime responded with bullets to the Green Revolution. They should not have had to wait that long. But we're not really talking about the timing of that is a minimal issue. The problem is that there was nothing besides words behind what the Obama administration did. And sadly, there will probably be nothing besides words behind what the Trump administration did. So that is a very good point. Secondly, no trouble, Greg. As for what would have happened to Iran, I know that there are a lot of folks on the right who are upset about the Obama administration's actions in Libya and overthrowing Muammar Gaddafi. I am not among them. I think Muammar Gaddafi was a bastard. I think he was a terrible tyrant, and I was glad to see him go.
Hear, hear.
I would have preferred greater involvement afterwards, but the former President Obama himself shares a lot of blame with folks in all parties and all ideologies for essentially forgetting about Libya once Muammar Gaddafi was knocked out of the box. So while it is partially his fault, it's not entirely his fault. Just about everybody else is responsible for that, including his 2012 opponent, who really didn't pay any attention to Libya until something wrong happened at Benghazi itself. But I don't care what would have happened to Iran had that regime come down. It would have been better than putting that regime in place. I will be one of the last six people on the planet who thinks liberating Iraq from Saddam Hussein was the right thing to do. I still think it's the right thing to do. I know what Iraq has gone through since then, but they've also had three free elections in the last 13 years for their federal parliament. They are on their way to becoming part of the free world. It's not easy. It is difficult. It can be bloody sometimes, but Iraq is better off today than it was when it was called the Republic of Fear under Saddam Hussein, and they use that term for a reason. The part of Syria that is outside of Bashar Assad's control, eastern Syria, under control of the Syrian Democratic Forces and other rebel forces, no longer Daesh or al-Nusra, they are better off now than they were under Bashar Assad, and all of Syria would be better off under those people than under Bashar Assad. And Iran would be better off without the tyrannical regime that rules them than they would be under it. I don't know if Trump understands that. He almost certainly doesn't. It's just that the fact that Donald Trump was willing to react that quickly and to make it clear that quickly that his heart has shriveled and tiny and Grinch-like size as it was, at least went out to the protesters. I was at least happy about that.
Do we think Donald Trump actually wrote the tweet? Because he's never used a phrase like "my heart goes out to." That sounds like Kellyanne Conway.
Well, you know, if his lawyer wrote it for him, then hey, great. Let his lawyer write more damn
Did
tweets
Roy
for
Moore's
him.
Jewish lawyer write it for him? Or
I don't know. But the, the fact of the matter is we all should be agreed on one thing, and that is that Iran would be better if the people actually did control their government, which they don't do now. And I would like to see an American president, and I don't expect it from this one. I didn't expect it from the last one. I would have expected it from George W. Bush. I want to see an American president who says, yes, freedom for Iran is a priority. It would make the Middle East better. It would make America safer. Let's figure out how we can do that and what we can do. Trump is not going to ask those questions. I wish we had a president who would.
Just one note about Iran. I just saw a headline, and I'm trying to find it again, that women, for the first time since the revolution, will be allowed to appear in public without wearing religious modesty clothing. So that's a win. That's good.
That's a step in the right direction.
It's a big step forward.
I mean, the fact that that was a law for so long sucks. But, you know, that you will no longer get arrested for having your hair uncovered in Iran is a major step for women.
It is nice. It is nice to see that hijabs are no longer mandatory.
Well,
there are a bunch of other things
and,
that are mandatory that I'd like to see go by the wayside.
Well, yes, but baby steps sometimes.
Rebecca, it's the article I'm reading. It's from 3 days ago. It says police are scaling back punishments for women breaking, but they are still facing. And I'm using my air quotes. I wish you guys could see these because they're quite great. My air quotes.
Greg is the air quote champion of the Midwest. Yes. We should put that on his resume.
Yes. They still face education sessions. So, yeah.
Oh, so they don't have to go to prison. They just have to go to re-education camps. Oh, yes. How noble of the Iranian regime.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, if Paul Ryan was a key legislator in Iran, he would probably be moving to make the price of re-education camps tax deductible for private citizens.
But only if they were private re-education
camps. Private, not
right. Only private.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
The tax deductibility of it actually goes to Betsy DeVos.
So let's talk a little bit about
what
domestic
he was,
policy.
That's what he was doing.
How do you say 529 in Persian?
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, so let's...
Now that we've thoroughly bored Kevin beyond reason.
I actually tuned out for a second.
exactly.
Which, of course, I hope our listeners are not doing. But I actually do want to change the topic for a minute from news and politics to what it is we do here. People at the beginning of a year will make New Year's resolutions, and usually it's some, you know, it's stop smoking, or Rebecca does great ones like learning CPR and things like that. But, you know, I think maybe it's time for us to be a little self-reflective on why we have this podcast, why people listen to this podcast, and what it means in the larger context of the national discussion that we're going to have going forward in 2018 and beyond. I'm going to stand on my soapbox again for a half a minute. Politicians often say, you know, we need to have a national dialogue about gun control, or we need to have a national dialogue about this, that, or the other. Hillary Clinton was famous for talking about wanting to go out and have conversations with the American people, and she doesn't want to talk, she wants to listen. Well, this really is the national dialogue. Podcasts have democratized media and the news analysis part of media in a way that 15 years ago, you still only had CBS, NBC, ABC, and CNN. Now we've got more news channels, but we also have individuals who are talking about the news. All of us here have some political background. We've all worked in campaigns. None of us has ever been a major national personality on the political scene. Yet people listen to us and care about what we think or find interest in how we look at the news. Why is that? I want to throw that out to you guys. I mean, DJ, you really are a special talent. I mean, we kid you about it, but you are a walking encyclopedia, and that's probably not giving you enough credit. But beyond that, what is it about what we do here that you think is important to our audience? And then we're going to go and give our audience their own voice in this conversation. But I just want to hear from each of you.
What the hell? I'll go first. I make myself go first just about every other conversation because that's who I am. I didn't mean that as a compliment to myself, but here we are. I think what people, you know, people say they want to debate the issues, they want to discuss the issues. And there are a lot of people who genuinely do. And there are a lot of people who, when they say that, what they really mean is I want everyone to agree with me. I think what makes this podcast different and what makes this podcast as well liked as it does is that we can have disagreements and we can still be friends. That is far less common than it should be these days. And perhaps it's easier that we're all relatively in the same party now, but it doesn't change the fact that most people who listen to this podcast for the first time will hear the differences of opinion and they will get surprised by it. In fact, I think, Kevin, you mentioned in our conversations off this podcast, one of the things that seems to frustrate our listeners the most is that my arguments don't get knocked down like tenpins all the time. And that may be because a lot of folks, particularly on the left, who hear this podcast, haven't heard my arguments much before. They generally hear the nonsense that spews out of what was the party that I was a part of. But I think what matters is to the listeners is that they can hear both sides of a viewpoint, and they can hear it from people who are still friendly to each other. That's something that is rare, and I think that is something that people like to listen to.
You know, I did a podcast for a friend of mine. His podcast is a Lutheran podcast, and it was how to get along with your family while discussing politics. And that was the whole basis of it. And he asked me, he was like, well, you're the people on your podcast, they all seem to get along together. They're all friends and you disagree on politics. What's your secret? And I said, oh, that's easy. Editing.
Kevin, you got to keep that.
You got to keep that. And it's true. Sometimes it does get heated, you know, which is kind of nice because we get it all out. And Kevin, by the way, does not get enough credit for the hours and hours each week he puts in for the editing, which is amazing. which is awesome because I don't have to do it, but it sounds great. On top of that, one of the things that I really like about doing this, it's the end of the year, we should say this, is that we do. I can easily say, well, that was great, DJ. Thank you for your opinion. I don't agree with it. I don't have to tell him I don't agree with that. I can say, okay. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, that was horseshit. That was horseshit. And he knows I'm saying that by me saying, okay. In the South, they say, bless your heart. Or, you know, but I can just say.
He's not kidding.
He's not kidding. I can just say.
I have told more than a few Southern women in my time, bless your own damn heart.
I can just say, thank you. You've shared. And then he goes, right. And in his mind, I know he's thinking, converted another one to the tribe. But we just move on.
Oh, no, I never think that.
And we go on. And it's a great way to exchange ideas. Now, I have probably, since we've started this podcast, this is episode 134, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think I have probably moved a little to the right, if anything, more towards the center, especially on economic issues, which I know nothing about. And I have to thank DJ and the members of this podcast over the years who have helped me know a little bit more. I now actually know how much is in my bank account. A rough number.
You're doing better than me.
So, yeah, that's what I like about it, is it's respectful. This is why I do it. You know, it doesn't have to be agreement. It also helps me when dealing with my family members who I don't always agree with, and people on the street. And I don't usually use bless your heart because they know that one. So.
Rebecca, why do you do this show? You are the newest addition to this group, and we are thrilled that...
I'm going to say, I've been doing this for over a year now, so I'm a long-time new addition.
And by the way, just so before I let you answer the question that I asked, I'm going to pull a Charlie Rose here answer my own question. Just for people who might be interested, the way that Rebecca came to us is one of our listeners said, hey, I love your podcast, but it would be great if you had a female voice there. I have a friend who would be perfect for you guys. And she told me about you, and that's how you came to us.
So yeah, and she texted me after she got in touch with you about that. She's like, by the way, I just told Kevin Kelton that you should be on his podcast. And I said, who? And I had to listen to the podcast to make sure I was going to be smart enough to be on this. it was quite a process. Hi, Stephanie. Thank you, by the way. I have often heard it said that education is not supposed to be comfortable. Education is supposed to make you confront new ideas that maybe don't fit in with your existing worldview and that are hard to learn to sit with. And sitting down with people of different political bents than you have isn't supposed to be comfortable. And listening to people who are speaking in good faith from the best of their actual knowledge, not people who are Tucker Carlsoning or Sean Hannitying their way through something, is not supposed to be comfortable. If you're, and I find myself having to monitor my reactions to news. If I'm reading something and going, hell yeah, this is awesome, I realize I'm engaging in confirmation bias. If I'm questioning facts and needing to learn more and having to dive deep to understand the issues, I'm engaging in my own education. And what I like to think this podcast does is forces people to engage in their own political education. We all know different things and we bring them to the microphone every week and share them with each other and with everybody else. And the point is to promote teaching and understanding, not just to be a pep rally for a particular point of view.
And I'll throw in a couple of thoughts. First of all, Greg, thank you for bringing up the whole editing thing.
Oh, you are very welcome.
But it is, I mean, it is kind of, listen, we have people who have become our friends because they found this podcast and sort of adopted it and made it a part of their regular lives. And I think they'll be interested to find out a little bit about why we do this and how we do it. First of all, it does take, believe it or not, you know, it takes us about an hour to an hour and a half to record one of these things. We have to plan it out before we turn on the recorder. Then we do a little postscript afterwards. There's then another 5 to 7 hour process to actually putting this together and getting it published. And I'm not going to pat my own back about the editing time, but a lot of the comments that we've gotten, a lot of the criticism that we've gotten over the last 2 years, most of it has to do with sound quality. And I just want to explain to people, you know, they say the levels go back and forth and blah, blah, blah. And they're right. They do. This is not a professional studio created podcast. A lot of the podcasts that you're listening to, whether it's Pod Save America or the 538 podcast is another example, they're sitting in a studio with a producer and professional microphones and every kind of equipment that you could possibly have. We do this over Skype, my friends. We do this. We literally scotch tape this show together. And yes, sometimes for, you know, whatever reason, one person's sound level is so low or so high that we can't adjust it quite right because I'm not a professional editor. So thank you, everyone, for staying with us, even when we, like, destroy your eardrums when you've got buds in and you're listening to us on your phone. But we do the best we can with what we have, which is not a whole lot. The other thing that I want to – I'm going to read just a couple of our reviews that are on iTunes. I'm not going to read the good ones. We've got many four-star ones.
Oh, no. Don't do this. My self-esteem, I don't know if I can handle it.
And I'm going to read them from most recent backwards. So even though plenty of them heavily criticize me, the first one actually names someone else. So don't take it personally. We will get to me. But this is what someone named RWL1395 said about us. Wow, that's a screen name.
I feel like I'm in a Leno Mean Tweets moment.
I was going to say.
You're going to like this one, Rebecca. Okay. Uh-oh. all the politics, none of the hate, and that's in quotes. They, by the way, they got our thing wrong. They meant real debate without the hate, but they wrote all the politics, none of the hate, should be all the politics, none of the hate, unless we disagree with you. Then it's all of the hate, end quote. Also, Rebecca is the worst. Not the worst, the worst, by the word. Not, they didn't say the worst. Oh. They said the worst with an E at the end.
Oh, the worst. Okay.
If another host disagree with her, not disagrees, disagree with her on anything, she just shouts that
Russian
host
bot.
Down. Yeah, really. She just shouts that host down with a horrible joke that pokes fun at Republicans. Really bad stuff. Also, just not entertaining. They don't dive any deeper than surface level on any of the issues, which is why I listen to podcasts, for the deep issues I can't get from mainstream media.
Oh, no, yeah, if you don't like mainstream media.
All right, I'll take credit for that one. That's my mom. That's my mom, and she was drinking. She's a horrible, mean drunk when she writes reviews on podcasts. So sorry about that, Rebecca.
She's, that's okay.
Mom,
but I am
going to
go on my
home.
LinkedIn and tell people that I'm the worst.
Mom, go home. You're drunk. And, stop it.
And first of all, I think we do a pretty in-depth analysis, especially DJ, who takes us to places that no one goes, even on CNN or Fox. So if you're looking for in-depth analysis, you're going to get more of it here than you're going to get anyplace else.
But to be clear, that's not always a good thing.
And historical analysis, by the way. The other thing is, we're all making horrible jokes. It's not just Rebecca.
And, yeah, come on.
We try to have fun with this stuff, ladies and gentlemen.
My jokes are only the second most horrible. I mean, come on.
You want serious? Go watch.
Yeah, well. technically mine are predictions, so they don't count as jokes. They're just really awful.
Right. That thing about my mom was a joke. She's actually quite a nice lady.
She's not a Russian bot in her spare time.
Well, she gets paid grammar. Well for that.
Well, that whoever that fellow was, they used the article the, and as I understand it, the Russian language doesn't actually have the. So usually if the shows up, it's probably not a Russian bot per se.
All right.
Okay. Here's one by someone whose title is Book Lovers Anonymous. They gave us one star, and they said, I have been listening for a while, and I have been disappointed numerous times. Now, why would anybody do that to themselves? They've been listening, and they've been disappointed numerous times. Stop listening! So our friend Book Lovers wrote, I've been listening for a while, and I have been disappointed numerous times by how the group acknowledges how minorities are often mistreated or not represented, but then the group basically laughs and jokes about it.
I don't think we've done that. Okay,
well, we
go
joke
on,
about everything. The line was crossed for me when Kevin repeatedly said the N-word and said that comedians and rappers say it, so he should be able to say it as well. Since when did those people speak for all black people? Why is a lack of diversity and bigotry funny? This show has a lot of potential, but definitely needs better people than who they have now.
Wait, so we should replace ourselves?
That was the point that I found really interesting. As if we have bosses who have hired us.
Although, to be fair, had I been on that podcast, which I was not, because I think I was coming back from Con Carolinas that week.
Right.
I would have joined Helena in saying that as a white person did not have any right to use that word.
And that's perfectly fair. Everybody did tell me that. That's perfectly fair.
I agreed with Helena too that you don't have the right to use that word too. But we're not opening up that one again.
No,
but I think but in that case it certainly says something that this listener, whoever they were, just completely forgot that Greg existed as they went on their rant.
Well, they also forgot that the person that I was arguing with was a black woman. So it's not like it was there was no diversity in the conversation. And Helena, stood her ground and I think made some excellent points. And quite frankly, I've thought quite a lot about that conversation since then. I think I learned quite a bit from it and the experience of having put that conversation out there in public and getting other people's feedback. So, we all learned from this. But I think it would have been less interesting if there hadn't been anyone here to voice that point of view and to test that point of view. So again, when people say they're upset that one person said something that they didn't like, but what about the other three or four that did agree with them and disagreed with me? That's what we're doing here, folks. So,
and it also comes down to, why do people argue? Most people argue to convince others, but there are some of us who argue in part to learn. We want to hear what the other person has to say.
Socratic arguing.
See how our arguments go. And there are far too few people who argue to learn. Most people want to argue to hear their own voice. But oh, wait, that's just me. Never mind.
And then I won't go through too many of them because this is a time-consuming process. The other thing is, you know, we're not professionals. One of our listeners who commented on Facebook a week or two ago made fun of the fact that we did an entire segment on the Russian investigation, and we said the name Mueller wrong every single time, and they were right. It was
funny. Did we really?
Well, actually, it was me and DJ. I think I started the ball rolling when I said Mueller, and DJ just ran with it.
for those who want an interesting trip down memory lane, and I don't really care if none of you do, I'm going there anyway. There was a. There was a correspondent.
You're really belligerent today.
Yeah, well, it's the champagne. What can I say? There was a novel from Jeff Greenfield, who was an ABC News correspondent. Now he's at CNN, called The People's Choice, which was a rather humorous story about a president-elect dying and what it means for the Electoral College because it hadn't met yet. And the losing candidate's name was spelled the same as the special prosecutor, but it was pronounced Mueller. And because of that, I have always looked at special prosecutor Mueller's name and go, oh, Mueller. And that's why I kept going.
Well, and if you were going by strict rules of German pronunciation, it should be pronounced Mueller.
Right.
Because the U-E combination is the same as the umlaut over the U, which is a Mueller as opposed to Mueller. But
exactly.
Apparently he is, I don't know, doesn't know German?
So the real question is, why is Mr. Mueller spelling his own name wrong?
Yes.
Pronouncing
it wrong.
Can we really trust a prosecutor who can't spell or pronounce his own name?
Oh, God, we just created another Trump talking point, did we? That's not what we wanted to do on this podcast. What the hell is wrong with us?
So, okay, so we've talked about ourselves enough. Now let's just go to, you know, what do you see? What are your New Year's resolutions, or what do you see coming down the pike for 2018?
I have two. One is I'm going to try to be nicer to our asshole governor. Darn it! Oh my gosh! I already broke it. Darn it!
Rebecca, what about governor? You? Do you have any thoughts about the year to come?
One of my major resolutions is to read and amplify more writers of color. Novelists and people in the news reporting space. And,
I'm so glad I went before you.
You know, and dismantling the patriarchy.
Wow, okay.
Maybe with a hammer to some kneecaps.
And speaking of the white male patriarchy, DJ, did you have any thoughts?
where's my ruling staff? Wait, I don't have one. Never mind. Probably, practice more, maybe cook more often so that my wife can write more than she has. I know HelloFresh doesn't sponsor us anymore, but, we use them now. They're not too bad.
There you go.
Those are probably the two that I'd be looking at going ahead. Rather mundane.
So basically you want more wine, women, and song.
That could be a way to put it.
Yeah. Dinner, which is the wine, practice, music, song, and giving Aura more time to get her stuff done.
Yeah.
Kevin, you got anything for us this year?
I do, and it's gonna sound like trite, but I am really going to attempt to listen to other people politically, not on anything else, but in politics. I'm going to try to actually listen and see if I can understand other points of view before I open my big mouth. I know that sounds kind of like, well, you should be doing that already. You're 61 years old. Why haven't you learned that already? But I'm going to try to get better at it.
Yeah, you kids should do that.
Yeah. Especially that asshole, Kasich.
That asshole governor of yours.
Oh, God. The worst.
So with that, I have another 7 hours of editing ahead of me. So let me just say... Thank you to everyone who's listened to us in this podcast and in the year and years past. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And by the way, our website, www.MorePerfectUnionPodcast.com, is going to be getting a redesign, hopefully coming out this week, but very soon. Please look for us there. We also have written commentary there. And add us to your Facebook timeline so your friends can see us as well. And come find us in the Facebook group Open Fire, where we debate between shows. We're all there. We'd love to see you there, too. Okay, what do you guys want to say about the new year that is coming? But our listeners are already in it, but we're still not in it because of some time warp. What do you think?
So my favorite thing that was a gift for the new year was the editor of the National Review had just said that if the primary was today, Kasich would probably not even get 25% of the vote against Trump in a primary, and he might even lose Ohio. That was the best thing in the world that I heard today.
Except for the part where that means Kasich can't unseat Trump.
Right.
Who cares in a primary?
I mean, it's a good insult to Kasich, but a bad outcome for America.